The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
On today's program today, we're going to talk to an active duty military serviceman who is moving into retirement, and he's trying to figure out the best way to finance a home purchase.
We're also going to talk to a gentleman that has just retired, and he's wondering, how do I build a portfolio for just income?
And we'll take calls, maybe yours, 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us today as we talk about financial matters, helping people make the most out of their hard-earned savings and be prepared financially for their future and making wise choices with their investments,
taxes,
estate planning,
insurance,
all those good things. And, of course, this program, if you've been listening to it for a while, Pat and I have been doing this for 22 years, and we've taken, for 22 years, we must have taken thousands of calls on
a variety
of topics. And every once in a while, we get something that's totally unique.
Yeah.
I mean, way so unique. But they're all a little different.
Yeah.
Because we, as people, we're all different.
Each one of our situations financially is different.
And so oftentimes when you hear about someone promoting that this is a great thing, that's not a great thing, you know, it might be great for the right person and not great for the other person. But anyway, we just think everyone's quite unique.
Yeah. In fact, if someone's calling you and pitching you on a product which is great or not so great.
Calls them pitches. The only calls I get are about solar energy. It's always some, they make it sound like they're from some energy thing. I get so frustrated.
On my cell phone?
Yeah, my cell phone. Then they make it look like they're calling from a local number or whatever.
Which you think is amazing.
But if you're going to start a relationship by tricking me, it's probably not the way I'm going to. Yeah. Anyway, off topic.
When they call me about solar, I ask, what is that and how does it work?
No. No way.
Actually,
capture the sun. How do you do that?
My favorite one ever was this years ago when they were calling, they were pitching phone services, and I told the guy I didn't have a phone.
As you're on the phone?
As I was on the phone. And it perplexed him.
Yeah, well, if you want to join us here at Hanson McLean, have a question for us, something in your financial life is happening, or someone's maybe pitching some financial product to you, or you're wondering if you have enough money saved for retirement, or the right kind of allocation given what the markets are in right now. If you want to join the show, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. It's 1-888-2-HANSON, and numerically it's 1-888-242-6766. So we'd love to take your call on really anything financial. And we'll start things off in Northern California with Bill. Bill, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Wonderful, Bill. How are you today?
I'm pretty good, but undecided. I lost, not sure.
All right.
Need some help.
All right, fire away.
Well, I'm in a situation like this. I almost have my home paid off. I need to borrow some money.
Okay.
To pay some bills off. Some bills off. A lot of equity. Mm-hmm. And not really sure of my credit score. I haven't ran it yet.
Got it.
But I'm thinking it may not be that great.
Well,
should I go for?
Let's walk through this. Let's walk through it, Bill.
Okay.
So, what's the value of your home today?
I think it's about 150.
And what do you owe on it?
Probably about 10,000.
And how old are you?
I'm 50 years old.
What's the interest rate on the mortgage?
It's almost irrelevant. It's
$10,000.
It's 3.9, 3.8 around there.
And who do you owe money to? How much do you owe, and who do you owe?
Private lender, United Home Loan.
And how much do you owe them?
About $10,000.
And what's the interest rate on that?
That's about 3839. That's the.
But you don't owe anyone else money. Do you owe money on credit cards? When you said you have a bunch of bills you need to pay off, what does that mean?
Well, all those bills. Yeah. I have like doctor bills.
How much do you owe? If you had a check today, how big would the check need to be to get back to level where you didn't owe anyone other than the home? How much money? $20,000, $50,000, $100,000?
Probably 20,000. I probably could do it with $10,000-$12,000, but $20,000 would be nice, and then that way I could do a few modifications that I would like to do around the house. And
so, do you have a company 401k or an IRA?
No.
Okay.
So I am usually opposed to people pledging their house for financing. And that's really the companies that lend the money, the mortgages, they talk about things like unleashing your equity or using your equity. But your equity is the house, and the equity is just the difference between what you owe to somebody else. So
you're just pledging the collateral in the house.
It's a personal loan that says, in the event that my word's no good, come take my house. That's what it is.
And the reality is that you're not alone. We saw home equity line originations, which are people that signed up for home equity line mortgages, second mortgages or lines of credit, increased by 8% from the first to the second quarter of this year. So it's actually growing. Lots of people are taking money out of their house right now. Because there's money in the houses to take out, and many people are using them to pay off high balance interest rates.
But the concern is, what's 5 years down the road, people find themselves in the same position, but now they have large loan balance.
And do you have a job, Bill?
No, I'm disabled.
You are. Okay, so you're living on some sort of a disability payment.
Right.
And these bills, the medical bills, you tried negotiating with them?
No, not yet.
How long have you been on disability?
I've been disabled for now probably 3 years.
And how old are these bills?
These bills may be 2 years old.
Okay. So do you think that the bills will continue to come in? Which is, if we take the $10,000 out of the home equity and pay these bills off, will you find yourself in a similar situation 3 years from now, 5 years from now? It's hard to say, though, because your benefits are dependent upon government programs.
Probably not, because I'm actually doing better.
Okay.
And I want to probably go to work through rehabilitation.
Got it.
Great.
I would take the $10,000 out of the home.
Well, if you could, he says his credit may not be good enough.
You could. You'll find someone that will actually lend it to you at a reasonable interest rate. You'll find someone that.
I don't know.
He's got so much equity in that. What do you think he should do, Scott? Just punt?
Here's our concern, Bill. You just told us you're disabled. Your house. You have a house that's essentially paid for.
Almost.
Right now,
yep.
Right. My concern. You end up taking some. You refinance, pledge some more of your house to get some more cash out. You've got to make those monthly payments.
Right.
And what happens if sometime down the road you can't make those monthly payments?
Then you end up selling the house. You end up selling the house and moving out, which is the downside. Because you wouldn't do anything but sell the house. If it was going to go into foreclosure, you have enough equity in there. And the reason it would go into foreclosure is because you couldn't make the monthly payments, even though there's equity in the home. So you'd end up selling the house out of underneath.
Unless you ran out of other lines of credit.
Yes.
So I don't like the idea.
So you're just, Scott's basically saying, live with that. Live with it. And if they're medical bills, have they been turned over to collections yet?
No.
Oh, they haven't?
No. And then I called on them, and I believe there's a new law now. It just came into effect that a lot of your medical bills want to go directly to the credit bureaus. I'm not sure.
I have no idea.
Study up on that.
I don't know. I'm gonna go with Scott on this one.
I'm nervous about your. I think it could be a short term fix,
creating a long term problem.
But it could be a long term problem.
So always make that house payment.
Brother, we'd be twins because I'm 50 as well. You're my twin brother, and I'd say, don't refinance.
You'd say two things. One, why'd you get all the looks? And then the second thing you'd say is don't refinance it. Don't. What Scott's point is, and he talked me into it, is don't put the house at risk. Don't put the house at risk.
Don't take any equity out.
No, no.
What happens? You can't. You don't. It's not like you can take the equity out. What you're really doing is borrowing,
and you're pledging your house as collateral.
And then you have to make a payment every month because you borrowed.
And the fear is that because you don't have the ability, we don't know where your income is going to be for a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Why risk the house? Just keep making that house payment.
And string along those creditors.
And string along those creditors as long as you can.
And work on getting in the rehab work program, and hopefully you can get back to work. And
But, yeah, I agree with Scott on that.
Yeah, and it's about minimizing your risk here.
So appreciate the call.
Yeah, and we wish you well, Bill. Let's talk to Jack. Jack, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call today.
Yes, sir. How can we help you, Jack?
Well, here's my situation. I am active duty enlisted military.
Thank you.
Projected to retire. You're welcome. Thank you for your support. Retiring next year. I'm not sure where I'm going to live yet. I haven't made that decision, but I am undecided on whether or not to mortgage a home or pay cash for a new home because I have managed to save some money over the years.
How many years will you have with the military?
23 and a half. Roughly.
And how old are you?
I'm 41.
And are you
just turned?
I assume you're going to go back to work in a something else other than the military, either as a contractor to the military or into some sort of field. You'll go back to work.
You don't think he's retiring for good at 41?
I've met guys that
he's
have
gone go sit at the beach every day.
I've met guys that retired from the military and they say they're retiring, but it normally doesn't last too long after.
Yeah, it's largely terminology. I'll definitely be seeking employment.
And what will your pension be?
Projected to be about $3,100 before tax.
And are you married?
I am, yes.
And are you taking a survivor benefit on this?
I will be taking the survivor benefit plan. That's the current plan. Yes.
Okay. And what's a house going to cost you?
Hopefully less than $300. That's what I've managed to save.
And you're worried about what to do in a year from now.
Yes, sir. Pretty much.
That's how he saved $209. That's how he saved roughly $300,000.
Yeah, I get that. Working in the military. Did you inherit any of this money?
No, I did not.
Oh, my gosh. What a great job. It kind of depends.
How are these dollars invested today?
At the moment, they are no longer invested. They are sitting in my savings account.
Okay. What do you think you should do? What feels good to you?
It feels good for me to buy the home outright.
Then that's what you should do.
Oh, wait a minute, Scott. Wait a minute. Do you have any children?
I have one child in high school who will be graduating and heading off to college.
And is the money set aside for the college?
So I've transferred my entire post 9/11 GI Bill to her, and she also has a 529 fund that I set up years ago that's got about $50,000.
Okay. Scott, you are so smug.
What do you mean?
Scott's sitting here shaking his head.
I just knew this.
Like he knows everything
about
you, Jack. Scott's sitting here shaking his head like, oh, I know everything about Jack.
You know, it's funny.
And why do you know everything about Jack, Scott?
I've been doing this for a long time. I don't know. You get to understand people. Here's the thing about money that I find fascinating. Because people are quick to tell their people how they should invest their money, how they should spend their money, etc., right?
You are, too. That's what we do for a living.
I understand. But no. What I want to do is figure out what an individual wants to do.
Most comfortable for Jack?
What felt right for Jack? If you called and said, hey, Scott, Pat, my goal is to die with as much money as possible. I don't care about my standard of living between now and the time I die. Right? That was your goal.
Mm-hmm.
But say, fine, mortgage the house, take a large mortgage on it, invest it in frankly, it's a 30-year mortgage. Let's invest in the stock market, put in the S&P 500. extremely high probability that you'll be further ahead down the road by living that way. But for most people, that's not their goal, is to die with as much money in the bank as possible. When we all make choices with their money, when you choose to go out to dinner, for example.
Have children.
Have children. These choices we make that...
Let your children get driver's licenses.
That take money away from us. They're not helping us with our net worth, our financial net worth anyway, but they're accomplishing something else that might be valuable to us in our life.
Supposedly some sort of spiritual net worth.
And so if for you, Jack, look, from a financial standpoint...
You're fine either which way you go.
You've lived below your means since you enlisted at age 18 or 17.
Yes, I've been doing it for years.
Right, and that's not going to change. Jack's not going to change, nor does Jack want to change. Why should Jack suddenly start spending more money? What for? You probably look at some of your colleagues and think, why are you wasting your money like that? You're an idiot, right? You probably do. Just think.
Is that how you feel about
actually,
your colleagues?
Yes, I do that frequently.
He does that frequently, right?
Do you?
They think the same thing. Why is Jack?
Yeah, why is Jack saving? So I agree with Scott. Jack,
it doesn't matter.
Pay off the house. Buy a house for cash.
And the beautiful thing
I'd slow down. If you found the perfect house that you wanted and it was $350,000 rather than $300,000.
Totally agree with Pat.
I wouldn't have any problem in the world getting a $50,000 or even a $100,000 mortgage
on
it.
A 15-year mortgage.
Or a 30 due in 7 or a 30 due in 5.
Yeah. Totally agree with Pat.
And what is your job pay now a month?
Oh, well, it varies. I'm living on the installation right now, so I get a lot of living costs covered for me. So I'm grossing about $5,700 a month.
Okay. Yeah. But, and going out and finding another job, I agree with Scott. But if you find a house that's $350,000 rather than
$300,000, totally agree with that.
Just pay the difference and enjoy it.
So you would suggest that I maybe mortgage $100,000?
Oh, no.
I'd use all – if you had $300,000 in the bank and the house costs $300,000, then pay cash for it.
But if it was $350,000,
then get a $50,000.
Then get a $50,000 mortgage. Don't be afraid of the mortgage. You're 41 years of age. You're going to go out and get another job
with a pension of $3,100 a month.
Yeah, you're going to go get another job. And I don't know what you do there, but my guess is that there's a good chance you'll make more money at your new job than you did your old one.
Likely, yes.
Yeah. So, my point being is don't. If you and your wife are out shopping for a home and something's in the $375,000, $350,000, $400,000 range, don't write it off because you're going to get a mortgage.
Don't tell her that yet, by the way.
Yeah, you can tell her that. You can tell her that.
It's too late. She's sitting next to me.
Absolutely.
I think she knows you pretty well by now.
Yeah, so. But my point being is don't go cheap on the house if the one you really want is $50,000 or $75,000.
Let that stop you.
Don't let that stop you. Get
you're 41.
Mortgage. You're 41.
You're not 61.
Yeah, and 71. You got a kid in college. I mean, you're almost done.
Done.
almost.
What does done mean?
You're not done. Done with all the hard stuff. Well, getting a monthly pension and your kid off to college and paid for it? That's the hard part. Is it not?
Well, hopefully Jack will find some new challenges ahead of him. At 41, you're still young.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. I don't feel very young.
Yeah, 41, right, Jack. You're young.
Yeah.
Don't argue with us.
Yeah.
We appreciate the call.
Two guys in their 50s. That is so young.
I remember. I'm 41. He's a climb mountains.
Yeah. I just find the choices we make with their money, there's a decision we make. Well, maybe we don't always make these decisions, but there's always a trade-off when we take our finances and do anything with our finances.
Yes.
When we go out to dinner, we are saying, I am going to give up some of my finances today in exchange for this experience I'm going to have. It's not really about the food.
I am going to buy a car that has electric windows in it versus hand cranks. That is, you're spending more money. Yes, you can still find a car that has hand cranks.
Can you?
Yes.
A new car?
Yes. I think so.
You think so? Okay, you don't know. So I'm guessing you don't crank up your window.
I have decided to spend the extra money for the electric windows.
But the fact is, we clearly understand this. As consumers, when we consume products and services, we realize it's an exchange. We're giving up some of our finances in return for this good or this experience. When it comes to our financial planning with our investments, we can make those same choices. We might say, for example, I've got enough money set aside for my future why do I want to take additional risk? I know that by not taking on risk, I'm probably not going to have as much money down the road, but I'm willing for that exchange.
I'm going to exchange the upside for the security that comes
That's right.
with it.
And look, there is nothing right or wrong about any of these decisions if they work for you. So, look, I don't have any problem with someone going out and spending $100 on a bottle of wine at dinner or whatever if it's not going to ruin their financial life, if they have the financial resources to do it. Wow, who am I to judge how they're going to spend their money? I don't
know.
That's their life, not my life. But it's the same thing. It's the same principles I think we need to look at when it comes to our financial planning. So
what's appropriate for that person? What's the trade-off? You know, risk is everything. Some people think that they'd rather that the goal is to get rich. For many, the goal is to not be poor. Right? You should never confuse that. Because you could do things in your portfolio where you put all kinds of risk, and if it hits over time, you could possibly make a lot of money. But at the same time, if you make a lot of bad calls, you could lose a lot of money.
I was just sharing, Pat, this week, a story with somebody, a friend of mine there asked me something, and I was reminded of, it was right before the financial crisis. There was two people I know that went into this partnership. They got together a group of friends. They're on the same industry. They're all in relatively high salary. They were all in great shape financially. They were all mid to late 50s.
Okay, so they should be, at that point in time, you should be starting to manage your money.
Well, at least the two I know had done well financially. They were pretty much set for retirement. This is when the real estate heyday was going crazy, and they decided they were going to develop some property because they had a great idea, and they looked like they had the right kind of tenant and the right kind of business model. And so they all put a little cash in, but what destroyed them was the loans they took out with the personal guarantee. These were people that had made prudent investment decisions throughout their entire lives. But it was one of those things that they didn't step back and say, "How, if things go well, how will this impact my life? And if things go poorly, how will this impact my life?" And I think when we're looking at any sort of an investment decision, whether it's how we're allocating our 401k, or should we buy this house, or should we have this rental property, if we sit back and ask ourselves, let's assume things go really well here. How will this impact my life? How will this change my life? And if things go poorly, how will this impact my life? Pat, I think another story. This was a long time ago. We had a client, had a home in Northern California that he raised his children on and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Had another home on the coast in
Alaska.
What state was he in?
Washington? Oregon?
Yeah.
I'm just naming coastal states now.
Yeah. So a home in a coastal state. And he called me up. I don't want to name the state because.
Yep.
So he called me up and he said, "Scott, I'm thinking about making this financial decision. I have been researching on this particular stock. I know all this information about it. I want to take half my portfolio and put it in that individual stock." And I stepped back and I thought, this guy enjoyed fishing, had a boat where he fished and stuff. I said, "Look, here's the deal." I said, "Bill, I said, if you're right on this, you can probably exchange your fishing boat for a bigger fishing boat."
Yes.
"But if you're wrong, the fishing boat's gone, and so is that second home." And so he obviously decided not to make that bet. Because
that was a way for you explaining risk. That was that you made risk real.
Well, that's what it is.
It's not theoretical.
You know,
for a lot of people, Scott, it's like they get blindsided because they didn't understand the risk going into it.
Well, look,
like how many people come to you and say, I never, how could this happen? Well, it's a financial
probability.
We could have actually told you the probability or the likelihood of this particular outcome happening, right?
There's a high probability we'll see a 20% decline in the stock market in the next year.
Correct.
How can we state that? Well, historically, it's happened about once every 3 years.
If you have an individual issue of a stock, an individual issue, there's a high probability that that could fall by 40 to 50% right. in the next few years. Well, how could the markets only fall by 20, but my individual issue would fall by 40 to 50?
Well, they're much more volatile.
It's an individual
issue. One individual company as opposed to a broad market. So, I mean, look, as financial advisors, and you mentioned it earlier in the program, a lot of our job is helping people understand risks and help them minimize those risks. As you stated, most people are more interested about maintaining their lifestyle, not becoming poor, than they are about becoming wealthy.
That's right.
And if you've got a financial advisor and you're not, you never have these kind of conversations, never have the conversation about what could go wrong, how do we minimize any downside risks, I'd kind of question what's the point of having this relationship with a financial advisor.
Yeah, like when we stress test the portfolios to give us some sort of an indication of how the portfolio will react in a down market.
If you want to invest for growth, that's great. There's a cost to it, and that cost is that your portfolio could fall like this.
Over a period of time.
Yeah. But those are the kind of things that have, I think, are important for people to have an understanding of.
Which was goes back to this call from Jack, which was, is it appropriate for me to either pay off my house or not pay off my house? And for him, it was appropriate for him to pay off
his house. Well,
he had the cash.
Yeah. So anyway, we're taking a quick break. We're going to take some more calls when we get back. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Yeah, we've hit our second half hour of the program.
And the better half, by the way.
And to
so
be
if you missed the first half.
Or if you like the first half, wow, are you.
This will be.
Maybe not, though.
Life-changing.
It could be a big disappointment.
You'll have to wait and see.
You'll have to right there. You won't know unless you stay to the very end.
And then,
hear from our sponsors. And then you'll know. 1-888-2-HANSON to join us if you'd like to be a caller on our program and like to share something, question that something you're grappling with in your finances, or someone's recommending something, or wondering if you've got the right kind of trust set up or whatever the case may be, if something in your financial life. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. We are in Colorado talking with Steve. Steve, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, had a question. I've recently retired, and so I've changed my portfolio or planning to, and wonder if you have a preference or recommendation on using individual equities, you know, good quality with predictable dividends, or just using index funds and then collecting the dividend or payouts that occur with those.
So let me ask you this, Steve. What you didn't include actively managed stock funds. What about those?
No, I didn't include those only because slightly higher fees, and from what I've read, the index funds have in general outperformed the actively managed.
Okay. So based upon the research that you've done thus far, lines up same with the research that we've done, most active managers can't outperform the index.
But you asked whether you should become an active manager yourself.
Yes.
Right?
Right. And the reason being that by, again, if I'm following the guidelines that I've read about and have, you know, been advised, is picking, you know, high quality stocks with long-term, you know, 15 years or more predictable dividends, and looking for income off of those dividends slightly higher than the 2.5% to perhaps 3% that you'll get from an index fund.
Let's circle back. So what you're focusing on is on dividend, right? I'm going to argue that you don't care about where the income comes from. The money's in an IRA, correct?
Yeah, IRA 457. Right.
Okay. So you don't care. What you're interested
from
in
a tax standpoint, doesn't matter. If
it doesn't
it's
matter.
Gain, qualified dividend.
Exactly.
You're interested in total return. And total return is dividend, capital gain, and interest payments. That's what you're interested in. Because what happens if a stock, let's take a stock like Intel, who until recently didn't pay much of a dividend at all, right? And you look at its 30-year track record. Why was it not paying dividends back in the heyday?
I'm going to assume because it was in a growth mode.
Or Apple, right?
Same thing, yeah.
So the point being is each individual, some of the, if you go out and look at this, some of the highest dividend paying stocks are the ones with the most risk in them at this point in time. The highest dividend paying stocks are the ones.
Companies like AT&T.
High paying
no
dividends.
No longer the phone company, right?
I mean, so I would lose that philosophy of dividends versus capital gains immediately. And I would concentrate on nothing but total return and risk. Complete total return and risk. Total return is dividends, capital gains, and interest.
And having said that, if you say, well, I appreciate your comment there, Pat, but I still like, I want to have a portfolio based upon what I like. There are index ETFs that will follow your exact strategy.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, they're high. I mean, they're high,
high dividend.
That's
high
exactly
dividend.
What they do. But you can list your qualifications. I bet you'll find an index fund that lines up right with your qualifications.
But in saying that, you said you have no, that you're not interested in bonds in the portfolio. Did you say that?
Well, we use a portion of them. I have about a third of the total portfolio into fixed income.
Okay. All right.
Two-thirds into the equity side. And so it's really focused on that two-thirds. And if, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'll agree. If there's an index fund that is doing what I'm thinking of doing and they spend full time doing it, I would much rather have my money.
They don't spend any time doing it.
They're tracking an index. Uh-huh. And there's thousands of different indexes.
Thousands? Hundreds, anyway.
Hundreds.
There's thousands of ETFs that track the underlying
index.
That's
probably the better way
to say it. There's probably hundreds of different indexes
out there. So you'll find an index that you're looking for. And I assume
an index is nothing different than some company comes up and says, you know what? Let's create an index. What's the parameters here?
What, Dow Jones?
Let's go screening. Okay, here's our screening. Here's the index. We have the utilities index.
The Dow Jones Industrial Index, Dow Jones is what people are most familiar with. 30, when it was first started by the Wall Street Journal, there were 12 stocks in it. 9 of them were railroad stocks. That was the first original indexes with the Dow Jones. And in your situation, I assume you have a fairly decent monthly pension?
Yes, with my wife and myself together. Yeah, it probably totals $40,000. We haven't really started collecting yet. We've decided to defer for a few more months.
Good.
Let's say $40,000, and we were looking to match that with about 3.5 to ideally maybe even 4%.
In order to get to 3.5 to 4% dividends in a 60-40 portfolio, or your 66-33, you would have to make a large percentage of that essentially. Dividend-paying stocks, and I think that's a mistake.
You're going to force your – if you're, all you're doing is looking at just dividends, and all the dividend is, it's a company – is where a company chooses to pay out some of their earnings, sometimes more of their earnings for that
sometimes
matter.
They borrow money and pay out the earnings. So my fear is
I can understand that. Certainly not something you'd want to do. I mean, you'd like to have that – coverage to dividends being at under 70%.
Okay, but
you're not going to get to 4.5.
You will actually, Steve, this portfolio, it will by the time you're done could have higher risk than a broadly diversified portfolio by the fact you are narrowing out so many other kind of companies
because you're paying attention to the dividend and not the overall portfolio as a whole. So you walked in with a strategy of, oh, I just want to buy things where I'm not going to touch the principal and I just want the dividend. And if I could just live off the dividend and I don't care what happens to the principal. This is what I'm hearing. So if you have a third of the...
assuming that the equities are of high quality, they have a long track record.
Quality and long track record doesn't mean anything for tomorrow.
So what I would do is, because it's in an IRA, I would treat it just as I would a pension fund. And I would have a portfolio that was 65% stock, 35% bonds, cash. And of that stock, and some maybe traded REITs in there. And of that stock, I would then start a distribution of 4% a year. A distribution of 4% a year, regardless of what the dividend income was. The dividend income wouldn't drive me one way or the other. Because if you're just focusing on the dividend income, I'm telling you, we're going to overweight this portfolio to what's called value. And it's either going to a lag in a growth momentum market, or you'll be disappointed with the rates of return. So I wouldn't. I'd leave that.
I like Pat's idea. You know, actually, Steve, if you went and looked, just did some research on some of the largest pension plans in the country, because they have the same exact problem you have. How do I generate a monthly income to pay for my retirees? That's your problem too. And look how they're doing it. And just to get some further education,
we manage over $2.4 billion. We don't use this strategy that you just described for any one of our clients.
But we have used ETFs that specialize in dividend paying for a portion of one's portfolio.
Understand,
not
but
the
we're
lion's
not,
share.
But we're not building the portfolio to get 4% dividends and a 65-35% portfolio because we're afraid of the risk that inherently is going to add to the portfolio.
Having said all that, if you still want to go with your strategy, you can find indexes that will accomplish just what you're looking for. Steve, congratulations on your retirement, and we clearly wish you well.
You gave up?
Huh?
I was trying to convince him. You gave up. You didn't think he was going to be convinced.
Well, how much time do I need to spend with someone telling them here's my view of the world?
Okay, I guess.
No, I mean, you know what I mean? There's other...
All right.
What's the point?
Okay.
He's either...
He's not either... either.
I don't know... I didn't know Steve well enough to know if he's the type of person who would just agree with me because he didn't... It would be easier for him, which is some
like
people
me.
Are that way. Yes, of course. You always let roll over. And then you do your own thing after. Sure, Scott. Yeah, no problem. I'll stay working late on Wednesday for you. And then he's gone all day. Can't find him anywhere. But,
okay.
No.
But it's a dangerous strategy that Steve is.
Anytime you're limiting your investments to getting more and more narrow.
Because you're focusing on one minor thing.
Particularly if you then back test it and say, well, wait a minute. Had we done this the last 15 years, we would have had this great success. And then extrapolate based upon what's happened the last 15 years, thinking that we're going to see something similar the next 15. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
So anyway, 1-888-2 Hanson to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. And let's go to Galt in Northern California and speak with Darren. Darren, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, Darren.
At what point does it make sense to invest in a 403B or a 457 when I'm already investing in maxing out two Roth IRAs and I have no match in either the 403B or the 457?
It makes sense when you are in a high tax bracket today and you believe at retirement you'll be in a lower tax bracket.
Or the same.
Okay.
Or the same.
Okay.
And then the question is, which one do I use, the 457 or the 403B? So I assume that you work in education of some sort, correct?
My wife is in education. She has the 403B with no match, and I am in law enforcement. I have a 457 with no match.
Got it. I would use the...
How many years do you have in law enforcement?
About 18. And I'll be eligible to retire in another 10 and about age 52 maxed out.
Yeah.
I would use the, all things being equal, I would use the 457 before I use the 403B.
Yes.
And the benefit of the 457 is that there's no restrictions at getting at the money at when you separate from service, regardless of your age. The downside is it doesn't have a loan provision on it like the 403B does. The 403B, you can borrow up to 50% of the account balance, not to exceed $50,000.
And I don't think we would ever be in that position. But
can you afford?
But you could take the after 5 years, you could take the principal out of your Roth without any penalty as well. So you've got a
and you're probably at a you know, we said something about where your tax rate's going to be. So if you're able to continue on another decade, your pension is going to be what your paycheck is now.
Yeah. Under the current pension rules, you're going to retire at about 90% of pay.
Yeah.
Correct.
And you most likely, if you retire at 52, there's a good chance, if you're like my friends that have left law enforcement,
you'll do something.
Most every one of them has done something.
Absolutely, and that's my plan to go on and do something else. So I'm just trying to.
Yeah, you want to use the 457? Do you have children?
Yes.
And have you funded their 529 plans for college?
I have funded the oldest, not the two youngest yet, and I'm not sure that I'm going to keep contributing to the the oldest and just roll it over, or it makes sense to have three different funds. I don't know.
How much is in the oldest one?
Let's say 25 grand.
What are the age spans?
And what are the ages?
Because they're complicated.
Yeah. She just started high school.
Okay, so she's 14 or 13, 14
and
or
the
15.
Other ones are.
The other ones are, let's see, 11 and
okay.
6. And I foresee us being able to cash flow any additional expenses.
I'm with you on that. Yeah, actually, you planned it pretty well.
Yeah, you're doing a great job.
Instead of having them all within 4 years of each other.
Yeah, but the reality is that if you separate from service in 10 years, you could at least the last
one. You said, he'll probably be cash flowing them.
Yeah. So I would use the 457 plan.
I would agree with
that. And I'd go aggressive.
Okay.
Okay.
And that's how my Roth is set up right now. My Roth is extremely aggressive, and it's, of course, done great this year. But
yeah, don't worry about it. You're not going to touch the money for 20 years.
Yeah. Don't even – that's the worst thing you do is next downturn is think, oh, maybe I should move on.
Yeah.
Do not do that.
No, just let
every downturn's recovered and come back higher than before.
So just let it be. And you've done a great job. Great job. Look at your public service family. Police officer, teacher. Yeah. Great job.
Yeah.
Great job saving.
Thank you.
All right, Darren. All
right. Appreciate it. Well.
You know, it's interesting.
All right,
so,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, people are, it's like it's done well lately. He's 42 or something, right?
Yeah.
So he's not going to touch the money for a long time. The Dow is over 20,000, roughly. 20,000, give or take.
What was it at when you got into the business 25 years ago?
Exactly what I was going to. I forget if it was 2,000 or 3,000. So it was 1990 when I began financial services. I don't recall if the Dow was at 2,000 or 3,000. But through that, we had the dot-com blow up.
Yeah.
The market fell 45%. We had the Great Recession.
Yep.
Where the stock market fell 50-some-odd percent.
We had a couple of flash crashes along the way.
All that stuff, right?
And where is it today?
Exactly.
How many different administrations have we had?
Exactly.
How many different ideologies that have been embraced by these administrations?
Right. And somehow, somehow with the free markets, companies continue to grow. New companies sprout up,
create
products and service that people want to own.
You've had a diversified portfolio the whole time.
My retirement plan's been 100% in stock over that time.
In the broad markets.
Not
a concentrated position.
But my point is, even someone who's 60 or 65 today, you can worry about the short-term blips, which we do because we're human.
Yeah.
And when it goes down, we don't like it. We see losses. It's painful. None of us like this thing. But if you look over a long period of time, steady wins. Yeah. So, anyway, something to ponder. Well, let's switch gears here in the program and talk real advice. This is the segment of our program we do periodically where we talk with a financial advisor of Hanson McLean. We do this for a couple reasons. One is it gives you an opportunity to see how our advisors handle real-life situations.
Yep.
And sometimes our advisors need their ego stroked a bit, like one we're about to have on. Needs to be on the show every once in a while, so it feels like a big wig type guy.
Yeah, that he's a hitter here at Hanson McLean.
And so, by the way, I'm just teasing. But the experience that this one particular client had was unique to them, and you may have a different experience at Hanson McLean. That's our disclosure. But anyway, we've got a great advisor on the air today because we have Patrick Henry. And Pat is a certified financial planner. Professionally, he's got almost 30 years experience in the industry, so he's been around a long time. He sits on the board of directors of Okaizu. It's a nonprofit that supports families affected by childhood cancer, and he's a scratch golfer.
Yeah, and I would say he's an excellent advisor and a good friend of both Scott and myself. So, Pat, thank you. Is your ego sufficiently stoked that you're comfortable talking on the air?
Well, please give me a moment to get my head through the door here. And you guys, enough about me, really. Let's take time so that you could tell me what you think about me.
Oh, thank you, Pat.
Just spend more time with that.
Perfect. Perfect. All right.
Well,
so,
Pat,
really quick, what is your handicap on the golf course?
It's a 1.5.
1.5. Are you still the club champion?
No, not anymore. No? I was dethroned of the club championship this last year. And so right now I'm just a lonely advisor.
Okay. Okay. All right. So tell us about a client you helped out and what happened here.
Yeah, so I had a client that I was working with a couple years ago, and we had done some pre-retirement planning, and he was offered a lump sum buyout of his pension at his company, and he was 57 years old, and he wanted to take this buyout. He thought it was a good time to leave. He was kind of done with his work there, and so he wanted to take it, but he was concerned about getting any kind of income prior to age 59 and a half.
And so they wanted a buyout of his pension then?
Correct.
Got it.
They were buying out and offering him a lump sum on his pension.
Which is something we see not only with companies more and more, but even people that are retired sometimes getting these offers.
Yeah, where they'll come to you 5 years into your retirement and saying, hey, do you want a lump sum? And for those people that are being offered those, just because your neighbor took a lump sum doesn't mean you should take a lump sum. Every offer is different.
Yep.
Every offer is different.
Right. And you really need to look at the details and what is determining that lump sum value. There's a lot of factors that are involved with it to see if it makes sense for that individual person. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and whether it affects your health insurance, retiree health insurance.
Which some does, yes.
Yep, I've seen that, yeah. So this worked out for this client. So we ended up taking the lump sum pension and rolling that over into an IRA. And he had a substantial amount in a 401k at his employer. So we used what's called the separation from service rule, which allows you to take withdrawals from your 401k if you retire in the year you turn 55 or older, and it allows you to take income out without any penalties, just the normal income taxes. So with this gentleman, we were able to create an income stream for him when he retired that helped supplement his income because he didn't want to do anything right away. He was 57. He knew he wasn't going to retire. But he wanted to take some time off, and in 6 months, he actually ended up going back to work for the company as an independent contractor on kind of six-month jobs. Yeah, he went back to where he was done.
He's part of the gig economy.
Yep. And he was very appreciative, though, of this strategy because it allowed us to stop the distribution at that time because he didn't need it for that 6 months, and then we turned it back on. And he reduced it. He could change it as much as he wanted.
So let's walk through this again for those that are listening and thinking, what did he just say? So the rule is, if you're 55 or older in the year in which you separate from employment, and they use the word retire, but it's really separate from employment.
I think it's separation from service.
Correct. Separation from service.
Yep.
55 or older in the year you do it. There are no penalties taking that money out of a 401k.
Of that
company. As long as you leave it in the 401k plan, it has to stay in a qualified retirement plan.
Which means it can't be moved to an IRA and then take the money out, or you'd pay the 10% penalty, correct?
Correct. Or you would be locked into what's called 72T distributions, which are very restrictive, and it's not something you want to use if you don't have to.
So essentially,
because he's 57.
He was 57, so my guess is you figured out how much income he was going to need for the next 3 years or so. And you left it in the company 401k so he would have complete access to it. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep. And a little buffer in case, you know, life happens or something. And this year, actually, this next February, he'll turn 59 and a half. We'll take the remainder of that 401k and roll it into his IRA so that now he can start a monthly income if he needs to. And we don't have to worry about the prior 59 and a half restrictions or penalties.
So let me ask you this. So you meet with new clients still at Hanson McLean, correct?
Correct.
And so how often do you see somebody that has talked to another financial advisor, like this situation? Because there's oftentimes people will retire. They'll retire before 59 and a half, or at least leave their major job before 59 and a half, but after age 55. How often do you see someone come in that no one ever advised them on this?
Oh, probably 8 out of 10 times.
Wow.
Most advisors don't bring this up because that's how they're compensated.
It's an inherent conflict of interest.
Yep.
I mean, we have that same inherent conflict of interest. We get paid to manage money. And so telling someone to leave their money in a company plan, you know, we believe that we can manage the money obviously better than the company plan. That's what we believe. But sometimes it makes sense to leave the money in a company plan because of the fact that the liquidity issues, especially with a 457 plan, which it doesn't matter your age when you retire, you can get at that money.
You know, the flexibility is so key, especially now when folks retire, because there's a lot more moving parts to retirement now. There's a lot of different things. A lot of people are working in retirement, or they're getting these offers to leave these companies early. So we're seeing a lot of people making career transitions prior to 59 and a half, and this rule really gives them liquidity and flexibility.
Flexibility.
Yeah. So
flexibility is key, particularly when it's oftentimes people are trying to figure out what they're going to do when they grow up, what they're going to do with the rest of their life, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. To leave at 57. Right. So
hey,
appreciate.
Pat, thanks, Pat, for being part of Hanson McLean. Hey, I want to bring up briefly the Certified Financial Planner Board, the CFP Board. They released some proposed changes to their code of ethics and standard of conduct. So every person who's a certified financial planner professional agrees to abide by their code of ethics and standard of conduct. Well, they are proposing that they're going to now require certified financial planners, this is pretty interesting, I think, to act as fiduciaries whenever they provide investment advice. And you think,
what does that mean?
Fiduciary just means putting your best interest first. Okay? Now, currently, they're only required to act in your best interest during the financial planning process. But the CFPB Board of Standards is looking at changing their code of ethics so that if you're a CFP, if you hold yourself to the public as a CFP, you got to put the client's interest ahead all the time, not just when you're doing some financial plan. You think, oh, sounds like a good thing, right? The industry, financial services industry, is opposed to this. The Financial Services Institute said it would cost firms millions of dollars to now supervise these people. It'd be a CFP tax. It's just amazing to look at the industry, how they somehow have the audacity to come out and say this would be a bad thing.
For the client.
To put client's interest first.
Yeah.
Hanson McLean, we are a registered investment advisory firm. We are required at all times to put the client's interest first. Anyway, we're getting short on time. I want to let you know of a couple things. First, next week, you want to hear next week's show, we've got Hall of Famer Terrell Davis. Pat McLean is interviewing Terrell Davis. Yep. You want to hear that interview and Terrell Davis and his retirement transition story. Plus, we are having kicking off another round of our 7 Personal Decision Point Retirement Workshop. This is if you are close to retirement, want to look at transition into retirement. We've got workshops coming up in the Bay Area and Sacramento the week of October 16th. And the Denver region the week of October 22nd. HansonMcLean.com will have all the details for you there. We're out of time. Join us next week at the same place. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.